Okay, I think we're ready to go. Bhakti Priya wrote something that I'm being asked to read. It's Reflections. During your classes, I learned about different acharyas that I never really thought about, such as Sudama's friendship with Krishna was a factor that increased his devotion, how Haridas and Srila Prabhupada felt unworthy for the duty they were given because of the love for Krishna and doing the best for him. We also got to analyze how Brahma felt after he realized who Krishna was and went deep into the humility of his prayers. In the youth class, we looked at relationships and how connection to Krishna can strengthen them. I really love that in the classes we learned about the relationship aspects of the great acharyas with the Supreme Lord. It made me understand what type of relationship we can have with Krishna, as well as giving service to other Vaishnavas. Before, I was very confused about how we are supposed to communicate with the Supreme Lord. After all, I thought he was just a lifeless deity. How could I possibly talk with an inanimate object? But it wasn't about talking, it was about understanding. The Lord has left many scriptures and acharyas for us to analyze. So many ideas and philosophies about the idea of worshiping him. You have to realize how much he has done for us to understand what he is still doing for us. As a youth in Krishna consciousness, I kind of tend to not really grasp the subjects learned because of how little knowledge I have. So I am really grateful for classes you have given us. It has certainly changed my mind about the world of Krishna consciousness. So Priyanka, Bhakti Priya's daughter. Okay, so Twelve o'clock. That's a lot of time. Gosh. I'll start at the bottom first. What is the karmic aspect of accepting items or help or assistance from people, devotees or non-devotees especially, if we are unable to use it in Krishna service? For example, you go to someone's house. If they give you something in return, do you accept it or not? Well, accepting a gift is not a karmic exchange. Karma has everything to do with the consciousness behind an activity, not exactly the activity per se. So, like Prabhupada expresses in Bhagavad Gita, two persons working in a factory. Factory work means they're doing identical activity. One is in Krishna consciousness and the other is in fruitive activity. So the behavior doesn't make something karmic or non-karmic. It's the consciousness behind the activity. So supposing somebody offers you something that devotees generally would not go and purchase. Now, I guess it depends on what that something is. If it was like a machine gun or something like that, you might not accept it. Or, you know, piece of meat or something, you might not accept it. But if it's something else that's just not in the lifestyle of devotee, you might accept it just for the sake of an exchange, a loving exchange, and then decide what are you going to do with this thing that you aren't going to use, but you graciously accepted something that somebody gave. I'm thinking of a little example. There was a Chinese couple doing their PhD at Northern Illinois University in DeKalb some time ago. And we had a regular gathering at that university, and it was a really nice couple. So their English was just exquisite. So I gave them a gift of Bhagavad Gita. And I mentioned to them that I visit China, and I appreciate the Chinese culture. So the next time I went there, they gave me a recording of traditional Chinese music. And I listened to it. It was very pleasant. The next time I went, I gave them something else, a recording of kirtans. And then they gave me chocolates. And I accepted. I didn't eat the chocolates, but it was a loving exchange. So there's no karmic connection for me to accept a gift that was offered, although it's not something that I'm, going to consume. So then I had to figure out, what am I going to do with the chocolates? I forget what I did with the chocolates. I didn't throw it away because it's... So I forget what I did. But accepting something that's a gift, it depends on the consciousness with which the gift is accepted. There's a nice story where Srila Prabhupada was offered $20,000 somewhere. And when it became known to the devotees that Prabhupada was offered $20,000, they informed him that the source of that $20,000 was somebody that was engaged in drug dealing. And that was the fruit of their drug dealing. So Prabhupada, when he heard that, he informed the devotees, please give the $20,000 back to the person who gave drug money. He wasn't insulting the person, but, he didn't accept it. No. Many people, there's a hundi box and, there's a credit card machine. And who knows what people are doing to earn their money that puts the money in the hundi box and the credit card machine. Probably something that's mixed. Probably. Being most occupations, they're not, sparkling clean. But when one knows that it's, illegal activity, then, it's and part of it depends on the consciousness behind. There's other examples too. So, good. Any discussion on that topic? We'll go on to the next question. You have a question?
Do we have to... I'm sorry, I'm still thinking. Do we have to think of what my position or eligibility to accept, supposing it's done in that
way? Of course. You're an instrument. And nothing belongs to you that's a gift that's given. It's, you're an instrument on behalf of Krishna, and then you use that gift in Krishna's service. Now there's a difference. Let's say someone has a job and they receive salary from their job. And then that same somebody goes and distributes books and they receive donations for that book or books they receive. The destination has to be clearly different. That is, money that's received on behalf of the spiritual master directly, immediately, his literature and donations to the temple, etc., etc., that belongs to the temple. Now, everything belongs to Krishna, including the salary, but you use your salary for maintaining your other services to Krishna, and some portion you may donate directly to the temple or the book fund or something like that. Now,
I'm particularly thinking about Srila Prabhupada's example that you quoted, Maharaj.
Which one?
The not accepting 20,000, yeah. Even though he might be qualified to use it and purify that money. He didn't accept. So in terms of that, obviously I'm not anywhere to accept or, you know, offer it. Even though I understand I'm an instrument, but I have my mixed whatever motivations inside.
I don't understand your question. Do you understand your question?
Sorry, Maharaj.
You're not Srila Prabhupada, and you're not in a position to make a decision like that. That's one of the things that you're saying.
Yeah.
So when you receive a donation, whether you should accept that donation that you receive, that this is a donation, not earnings, should you accept it or not accept it? That's your question.
Donation or gift. Donation or gift.
Donations or gift. Okay. You know, there's so many variables. There's no one answer to your question. The consciousness behind and, you know, the intention behind are both factors that need to be considered. You don't have to be obsessive about it, but there's factors that have to be considered. Supposing, let's just, you know, there's so many factors. Here's one. Supposing somebody is giving a donation because, not explicitly, but implicitly, they want a favor from you. It's kind of like a bribery, not really a gift. I'm doing something for you and I have an expectation something's going to come back in the way that, you know, you may not know or you may even know, and someone gives a gift, expecting something back. So then, you know, that's something you have to factor, depending on so many things. So the intention behind the giver of the gift, and the consciousness of you as an instrument of acting on behalf of Guru and Krishna, and, you know, so Those are things to be considered for sure. Okay. You mentioned in one slide about acceptance. It was a whole session. There were 4 points. I just remember only one. That one that he can remember, he wants me to repeat the others. If someone does good and we don't accept, We are envious, jealous, but if we accept, it becomes inspirational. How about this? I showed that slide multiple times, and Sundari Radha will send me a little text message to remind her, me to send her that slide, and then she can send it to whoever came. Remember? You were downstairs in the kitchen with your apron on. But there was this, you know, the acceptance slide. Ask me to send it to you, and I'll send it to you, and you can forward it to everybody. Okay? Whoa. How to perform better in service to Krishna? How to perform better in service to Krishna? That's pretty broad. How to give a simple answer to such a broad question? Well, a simple answer is we look to the example of our founder, Acharya, and meditate on how he did better in service to Krishna than others who were also disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta. And by the way, it's not that Srila Prabhupada was the only person who received the instruction. It was unique to him, and nobody else got the same instruction to go to the West, English-speaking parts of the world, and deliver the message of Lord Chaitanya. Many, in a general sense, received that instruction. It was a major endeavor for Bhaktisiddhanta as the Gaudiya Mat. The little history was a few things. For the two sannyasis that were sent to England, Bhaktisiddhanta requested every one of the 64 Gaudiya Mats to make a financial contribution to assist these two sannyasis to make the journey to England. So everyone was a participant. Everyone knew about it. Second, it was held up because Bhaktisiddhanta was waiting for the finished version of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. It was a book this thick by Professor Sanyal, and it was like a PhD thesis. It was really detailed and detailed and detailed. Lots and lots of detail. He wanted that to go with these sannyasis so they could introduce who is Lord Chaitanya to English-speaking parts of the world in a very learned fashion. So it was held up, and everyone knew it was being held up waiting for Professor Sanyal to finish. And a third, there's photographs of a big festival. You know, maybe you've seen in India that they just have somebody create an arch using bamboo, and they decorate the arch with colored thin cloth, and then that's the gateway. It was just out in a field. A big arch, you know, so then Bhaktisiddhanta dressed very fancy clothing with hundreds of devotees behind him, leading the way to like inaugurate this, sending off these two sons. It was a big shebang. All kinds of persons were involved. It was part of his mission. So what Prabhupada did was he took it as his life and soul. against all odds, etc., etc., feeling unqualified, etc., etc. He did it anyways because it was his life and soul. I know some devotees, so this is how to be better in devotional service to Krishna. Take the mission and the message of and the instructions of your spiritual master as your life and soul. And all power to you. Just yesterday, a little example of this, I received a letter from somebody in China who some years ago they asked for an instruction. So I saw a certain quality and characteristic in them and I gave them a specific instruction. And they took it as their life and soul and it's still their life and soul. And taking it as their life and soul, it's not like I was jumping up and down in the sidelines as a cheerleader saying, go team, go. And you know, they just took it to heart. With lots of opposition, without the details and details. The details are very interesting. But their own lack of ability, their own, what they had to sacrifice, what they had to learn, how to qualify themselves, coming back to China, and then starting against, you know, climbing a mountain, and then people saying, don't climb the mountain, and some people saying, climb the mountain, and they didn't deviate. And there's been opposition and it's moving. And certain persons that are deeper thinkers, they're like holding their hand and saying, you know, this is really good, keep it up. And there's some other people saying, rah, 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 and those kind of things. And they're just like, there's only one thing. And they become very powerful as a result. I mean, they had some gift from Krishna before that, some intelligence and some training and some this and that's. But I'm remembering a section, one of the documentaries of Prabhupada. I forget the professor's name. He was a teacher in Franklin and Marshall in Pennsylvania, professor or something, I forget his name. And he was being interviewed in one of the documentaries. And he was saying, I met some of Swamiji's disciples. It was Satsrup Maharaj because he was always interested in reaching educated people because Prabhupada was interested in that. So he said, I couldn't believe when I heard them say Mission Impossible was practically a done deal. Like specifically he said, this young man said he was asked by Swamiji to restart Back to Godhead magazine. He didn't say Satsrup Maharaj's name, but it was Satsrup Maharaj. And so I asked this young man, have you know anything about a magazine publication other than reading one? And he said, no, but Srila Prabhupada wanted me to do it, so it's going to happen. And he said, I was like bewildered. How is he going to make it happen? Where does he get this confidence? And then some time passed and I visited New York and I met Swamiji and then I understood. He just invested that confidence in Mission Impossible just because he said so. So one who has that firm faith and carries the instruction of the spiritual master as one's life and soul, that's how to be a better servant of Krishna. You get Krishna's shakti, empowerment to do better than you even imagined. Okay, here's two japa questions. They're like this end and that end of the spectrum. What are some of the palpable experiences of chanting japa? We hear so many glories of the holy name. How can we explain to newer devotees as well as ourselves what to expect during japa? And related second question, sometimes I experience sleep or tiredness during japa. When we experience a negative experience during japa, how can we understand that? Well, what to expect and how can we understand what we experience? Really simple. We can expect that Krishna is very kind. That's for sure. And what that's going to look like, we don't know. But it's for sure that Krishna is very kind. That's what you can expect. And in the beginning stage, there's highs and there's lows, or hills and there's valleys. There's ups and there's downs. It's just the nature of conditioned life. So we can expect. And how do we understand when it's a valley? It's just part of our conditioning. And stay with it, because there's faith in the process and the activity that purification will come, and that valley or that low or that unpleasant experience is just part of the purification that we would be going through if we weren't chanting or engaged in devotional service, but it would look different, just be karma and not purification. So you can expect that Krishna is going to be kind, because that's his nature. During this week that I've been here, I met some young man who 6 months ago, he lives in the suburbs. 6 months ago, he met the devotees distributing books in downtown Chicago. He got a book. And he started reading, and it was, wow. And somehow, apparently, he was like a ripe fruit. So the devotees told him about chanting. They didn't give him beads. They just told him about chanting. And so he started chanting. And he was sharing with me, the very first time I sat down for chanting, I felt an emotion that I've never felt before. And I was crying. My whole body was shaking. And I didn't know what that was. So, what each one of us is going to experience when chanting, who knows? And it's not like Krishna is kind to that person and he's not kind to you and me, because that doesn't happen to you and me. Krishna is kind in different ways according to time, place, circumstance. And some people need an encouragement. Some people hearts are soft. Some people are, so many different circumstances. But purification. And, stay with it for the long haul, because to get into the place of darkness that we're in, it didn't happen overnight, and to get out of it isn't going to happen overnight. It's a journey. Commonly, because we're attached to temporary and expecting happiness that is of the temporary nature, and we hold on to our material, not to the sufferings of material existence, but to the sources of our sufferings. So generally it's a gradual process. And so what can we expect? Krishna's kind. And the experience is going to be whatever it is, out of the kindness of Krishna. Why don't I like chanting japa, but I like kirtan? If I set up a schedule, why can't I follow it? Those are really, very simple, direct questions. Well, the liking of kirtan but not liking of japa says something about what the liking of kirtan is. The liking of kirtan has something to do with the social aspect and the musical aspect. That is to say, in cultures all over the world, even, you know, mode of ignorance culture, music is big as part of culture. So people like music because people like music because people like music. It's just part of human nature. And so the musicality of kirtan is attractive. Now, some people don't like the musicality of kirtan, but many devotees like the musicality of kirtan because of the musicality of it. They're attracted to that dimension of it. And then there's a social aspect. That is, you're with other people and there's social interaction. When you're chanting japa, those two things aren't there. It's just you and the holy name. And there's a third entity that's also there. The mind. So the mind isn't attracted to the name. The mind is attracted to musicality and social interaction. We like those things. But that's okay. Like those things and like kirtan and participate in kirtan, and by purification, gradually, not just the musicality, but the attraction for the name can emerge through purification. And making a schedule but not keeping it, that's just the flickering mind. Intelligence says yes, and the mind says, I'm in charge. That's a no. We're conditioned. Okay, here's just some words of appreciation. No question, just I like the experience we just had. So I'm being asked to share thoughts on aspirations for career development. As practicing devotees, we understand Krishna is our maintainer. But to what extent should we or shouldn't we aspire for a successful career? Well, again, this is, you know, a level of consciousness question. Well, we'll go to the higher level of consciousness. And we should aspire for pleasing Krishna. And part of pleasing Krishna, while he is our maintainer, we don't just like lie in a hammock and sip lemonade and say, Krishna, go ahead and maintain me, I'm ready. We serve Krishna. And when we're serving Krishna, it's not our boss or our quality or our intelligence or our combination of things. And that's what's maintaining me, and Krishna's over there just waving, you know, Hari Bol to me. I'm not the doer, but I'm a servant, and my service is connected to Krishna's reciprocation as my maintainer. So I do, but it's Krishna that's maintaining me. So when I am engaged in a career or preparing for a career or, you know, just going to school, our younger persons that may not have a career goal in mind, but going to school. So why should I bother going to school? Well, somebody says I have to go to school so I can get a career, so I can maintain myself, so I can have some ability to serve Krishna. So even the going to school part or the career development part, it's seeing that in connection with service to Krishna. And that he's my maintainer, but I'm not going to ask him to maintain me. I'm going to be his servant, and he's the one that's maintaining me in the activities of service that I'm doing. Somebody want to discuss this some more? Nice fellow. She apparently knows the fellow. He's a regular?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Anyone want to further discuss the career development question? Yeah. How's your career going? You don't have to answer that. He's having some difficulty. It helps to turn it on, yes.
It would help, sorry.
Much better, thanks.
Sorry. Because on an individual level, I feel like sometimes you ignore that this is overindulging or overendeavoring in the form of, in the name of career development. If I have too many aspirations, maybe it will come in the way of my service to Guru and Krishna. Although that itself is also service. But,
yeah, that's the idea. That's the idea. Intelligence should guide all your activities, and then it becomes time management. You have more. Okay. It becomes time management. That is to say, you know, there's too much and there's too little. And it's not, you know, like a balance between too much and too little. It's just there's so many hours in the day and in the week. So depending upon, or in the month, depending upon how you like to schedule yourself or combination. So this much I can commit to my bodily requirements, and this much I can commit to my career requirements, and this much I can commit to my sadhana requirements, and this much that's time management. And I prioritize the big rock, that's my sadhana. I don't compromise that one for anything. But, you know, when I can expand it, but it's, you know, this, and you just manage your time. So then it's not too much, too little. If you feel that you need to take, hit the refresh button and spend a little less time or a little more time on career development, then you decide that. And then just follow the schedule, because that was the question. It's not easy, because we get distracted and something that's pressing on me takes the priority, and then the thing that's, you know, the block of time gets squeezed. And then there's different times of the year, just like this young fellow sitting next to you has been through some difficult, you know, marathon. And so that was known ahead of time, and he's managed his time accordingly, and just some things didn't get done because he knew he wasn't going to get them done, and they'll have to come later. So that, you know, that, so there may be periods of time that you go to plan B by design or by circumstance, and then you go back to plan A. And you can, they have to, like, have a flexible plan A, but a basic plan A. And then it's just time management. Then it's not too much, too little. There's somebody that's not here right now that just had a discussion with me a while ago. They put the career development in the back seat. And it was deliberate. And they're not regretting that they did it, but they feel it's now time to put the career development now, because there's other things they gave priority to, and it is given stability to their personal life, their family life, their spiritual life. They're ready to reprioritize. The career development's going to come more towards the middle seat instead of the back seat by design. because they wanted, you know, there's the strong sadhana in place and not make the mistake of career development displaces core sadhana. And they've gotten strength from that decision. Now they're ready to, so then it'd be a time management consideration, not that time manages you and squeezes you and you don't have any direction. Okay? Yeah.
This question is usually asked to me also about time management. And many times when I'm talking to grihasthas...
When you're speaking to whom?
Grihasthas.
Oh, I thought you said professors.
So if you break down the day of a typical grihastha, minimally 8 hours of work, 2 hours of travel time, 10 hours gone, 6 hours of sleep, 16 hours in a day, 4 hours for basic sadhana, which becomes 20 hours. Then you're left with 4 hours in which you have to squeeze in time for your services,
family,
and other emergency or practical things at home. So I'm trying to see, when you say time management, no matter how much you try to do time management, you're always short of time. And then there is always this constant demand for, because if somebody really has this kind of a regulated sadhana, it's natural, you're chanting, your responsibilities grow in services. So there is this push where the responsibilities are growing, and there's also this need that I don't have time. So it almost seems like life has become a lot more complex after becoming a devotee than what it was before. Because even weekends are totally gone because there is something happening. So how does, for me, when I hear this, and especially now when people come to me asking to help them out, I have a crazy schedule to maintain my thing. It's not a very healthy system. So I don't know how to help because I myself don't know what the solution is.
What you're speaking is reality. It's not, you know, exaggeration of any kind. So accepting the reality of the situation that you described. Here's the only thing that, two things. When one is, when one's inclination, inspiration, etc., drive to do service increases from quality, proper, sustained sadhana, hearing and chanting, and there's only so many hours in the day, the two ways of describing Krishna, who is the controller of everything, including time, makes it possible that you as an individual or the grihastha as an individual can be more focused and more effective and accomplish the same thing in less time. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, the result of that is the sadhana, instead of being 4 hours, shrinks. It just means that there's focus, and the focus results in strength, and that strength results in the effectiveness in each and of the every things that you do. For example, you know, of these 4 hours, this discretionary gets crowded with more things than there is time to do those things. When you're taking care of your deities, or you're interacting with a family member, or you're in the kitchen, or whatever, you know, whatever goes into those 4 hours. You're more focused, and so the exchanges are more meaningful because you're more focused and it's, you're Krishna-centered and Krishna-focused and focused on the person. The time spent is not this much time, but, you know, very focused and very satisfying time. Now, more satisfying if there could be more time, but there can't be more time. So, my answer, one of the two answers, one of the two responses, besides what you spoke as reality, it says, as Krishna consciousness increases, one's capacity to accomplish things, the same thing in less time, becomes possible by Krishna's empowerment. Are you you're raising your hand before I got to the second one. Go ahead, give her the microphone.
As the capacity increases and to do things more efficiently, what I notice is then somehow Krishna
gives you more.
Gives more, yeah.
Yeah. I'm very familiar with the territory. One simple solution is don't chant nicely, because when you chant nicely...
I'm tempted sometimes.
When you chant nicely, you're going to get more service. So there is... The other thing I was going to say is, there is always, this is my experience, there is always the anxiety that there's more to do than there is time to do, and that's good. It's a good sign. You're doing things right when there's more things to do than there is time to do them all. Not just like notionally, because a lazy person also may feel like that, but an active person feels like that. And it's good. It's a little bit like, so this is the second Bhaktisiddhanta's expression, which Prabhupada repeated, which is, I mean, there's essays that he describes. He would, if some Gaudiya Math had some money, he would demand that they use the money or give him the money so that they would have to be in anxiety about money and not become complacent and lazy. Because now we have money, we can relax. He didn't want his followers to relax. He wanted them to be not exactly in anxiety, but, you know, not be complacent. So that when the householder, not just you, but the householder, has more things to do than there is time to do them, that's a good sign. And, you know, not just notionally, but genuinely, factually. Then that creates some tension, but it's good tension. So then, like this stress management example is, there's eustress stress and there's toxic stress. So one's expectation for oneself of what it is that is in, it's in the stretch range for me, and I'm still not able to do within the stretch range for me, that's good stress. It keeps us from being lazy. And then there's the toxic stress, that you start going, you know, debilitating, going down. So then that's an intelligence factor that says, this is my capacity, this is a stretch capacity, and more than that, I'm just going to have to say to myself and to others, you know, if you want me to do this, okay, tell me what's going to go off my list. That time management. But, you know, that there's always going to, it's good, there's always more to do than there is time to do. And then capacity to, this is my experience, capacity to do more than you were able to do yesterday. And then Krishna gives you more to do. It's always, that's been my experience, there's always more to do than there is time to do. That's good.
So I have a follow-up question. So we all, most of us live in a devotee community, at least I would say here in the temple or Naperville. at least these two communities. There are a group of families who live close so that they can render services. And knowing each person's capacity and ability to render service or time management varies.
Yeah.
So one person's lack of time management kind of has an effect on other person's, they may be good, but then it falls on them because now they're able to do it. So how do you manage that in a community? Because then it becomes a community that's fully stressed. I hear that from my community, at least here.
Yeah, this is the classic, not just a temple president perspective. Anyone that has organized something that's with a group, you know, Radha Sundri has now had, you know, a few run through, you know, few experiences of organizing different things. And it's the same situation. Rasika Mundry did some of this stuff before, and she had her take on that situation. And you know what her take on, I don't need to repeat what her take on that situation was. What you said is true, but it's also reality. That is, the same reality that a few people do a lot, and some people do very little, and some people just compliment you, gosh, you're doing a lot, and they just keep walking. And then you're like, excuse me, would you like to help? Oh, you're doing a great job. I got to chant my rounds, Prabhu, or something. You know, I can't make a sacrifice because I have my priorities. And that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. And it's been the way that it is since I, you know, 50 years. It's the way it is. So it's like the donor pyramid. You know, the 20% give the 80% and the 80% give the 20%. And some other people just don't stand around and say, hey, you guys did a nice job. And they don't do anything.
You saying that, why is it that always we have been asked to step up? How do you respond to something?
It depends
like that?
On you. I know how I respond. I just said it. It's just that's the reality. You know, and then different persons. She introduced us without giving the names of the cast of young girls, young ladies, who were her team. And they probably did an ocean of work along with her mom, because those are the people that do stuff. There's, without naming names, I'm sure there are some other people also. But, so, that's just the way it is. So let's work together. This is, you know, it depends on how I would speak to different leaders about that situation depends. Or the followers. Let's find another person or two, or, you know, like with the deity worship in the temple. There was a time when it was Renta Pujari, the revolving door. Our one person comes and gets his green card, and the day after he gets his green card, he disappears. It was just part of the revolving door program. And some people didn't even wait for the green card. They just, so that was awful. And then the pendulum went the other way. And then, so the practical solution is a combination. And it's still a struggle. And in one sense, that's good. In another sense, it's not good. I mean, I was just visiting. So it's going to take some time to build the infrastructure. This is my term, infrastructure. Like in Los Angeles. I was in Los Angeles, whatever it was, 10 days ago or something like that. And I said, you know, compliments to all of you. Because here's a temple, wherever I go, whenever I come, I can always rely on really quality deity worship. And it's not just the head pujari over there. It's a community that's really dedicated. Now, I believe they have some R1 persons but, you know, it's largely a community. But it happened because Srila Prabhupada invested gobs of money to buy those apartments they couldn't afford now because they're too expensive. And the community lives in walking distance from the temple. Now, we don't have that blessing. This is Rogers Park. And so it's a struggle. So how do you say to the people, the question, well, how do you respond? Let us work together. Let us work together to find other persons who wish not to twist their arm because when it's joyful on the altar, persons want to be part of the joyfulness. Being that some people are going to say, oh boy, you guys are doing a great job. But some persons think they want to be part of the joyfulness. And, you know, I was thinking this morning, at some point in time, Sundri Radha is going to want to find someone that she can train as an apprentice that can do the Sundri Radha after her. Because that's what leaders do. They want to have an apprentice and then step back and let that newer person take on the function. Because her life is going to evolve like everyone else's. So you as a leader or any one of us in our different roles, we want to see persons, come to the next level. So the persons that are saying, how come we have to do the other people? Let us together collectively find the other people. At least one other person. They not twist their arm, but they have their respect, their time management requirements, and jump in the pool. Become part of, with boundaries, part of what's going to make this happen and lively, which is by compliment to not just to Swabhas and the head Pujari, but to the community. It takes time to build a community. It takes time to maintain. Once there's a community, it's easy to build something and then it dissipates over time. It's just the nature of time. So it takes time. It takes a quality person to build and to maintain. So you with your team, find persons who can have inclination for this and that and the other thing. And, a long-term, intermediate, and a short-term solution. It's not easy. I invite anybody to be temple president for a little while and see what it's like. Or you don't have to be a temple president. You can just be, Radha Sundari Radha's right-hand man or lady. See what it's like. There's a lot of stuff going on. And, she's smiling. She does have a good sense of humor, too. She does tell good jokes. I like her jokes. Middle school jokes. But they're nice. It's nice. It makes it lovely and lively. Thank you for your service. And I do hope you are successful, because I'm sure your talent scouting. Find other talent. In reference to Brahma's prayers, I want to clarify my concept about the difference between the speculators and the Mayavadis. New paragraph. You also mentioned two types of Sayuja Mukti. Kindly clarify which one is better between the two. Well, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said between the two, the one is worse. As they see Krishna's form and they want to merge with Krishna's form, that's worse. What happened to those who merge into the body of Krishna like Agasura? Well, they merge into the body of Krishna. That's what happens to them. Like, Krishna's body is whole. It's not like it's made up of different parts. But they, exactly, that some people ask their question, what exactly does that mean? What exactly does that mean? I don't know what it exactly means. They merge into the body of Krishna, and what do they just like? Hang out in the body of Krishna? Doesn't sound so bad. But it's the mentality of envy towards Krishna. I want to be Krishna. I want to be one with Krishna. Not the mood of service. That's bad. So exactly what it means, I don't know. I can research. In reference to Srila Prabhupada's pranam mantra, kindly clarify who are nirvishesha, nirvishvadi, and shunyavadi. So, nirvishesha is the Buddhists. No, nirvishesha is the Mayavadis, and shunyavadi are the Buddhists, voidists. Are the Paramatmavadis also kind of impersonalist? Well, it's not exactly kind of impersonalist, but it's kind of impersonalist. They're not understanding per se the Bhagavan feature. In that sense, it's not yet fully personal, but it's not Brahman either. The featureless, undifferentiated. It's not that kind of impersonal. The difference between speculators and Mayavadis. Well, speculator just has to do with the process. A Mayavadi has to do with the conclusion of that process. Because let's just say a speculator could speculate on something material, having nothing to do with the source of everything. They can speculate on whatever. What's the temperature outside today? I mean, I don't need an answer. I could say one can speculate, sit here in the room. I would say the temperature outside is, and somebody said, no, the temperature outside can't be that because there's sun, so it's got to be something else. Or the wind is blowing, so the temperature has to be something else. So there's three different views on what the temperature is without really knowing what the temperature is. The speculation is a process and Mayavadi is conclusion. The Absolute has no form. Here's a Bhagavad Gita question. A wise person should not lament for the living or the dead. Also, as we learned yesterday, we should pray to be kind to living beings. So you're going to ask, should we be kind to dead beings too? That's not what the question. Is it wrong to be feeling sorry for the homeless and to the point of crying for people in dire circumstances? Well, this has a yes and no answer. The material circumstance is not the criable feature. It's forgetfulness of Krishna is really the criable feature. During our youth gathering, that the topic was yeah. So the compulsion to indulge in instant gratification, like social media and other things and other things. So I was just commenting, it's not just youth, because I travel quite often, and I see well-dressed business people, older age people. I'm really surprised with the older age people. And they, you know, they're like technology dumb, but they're sitting there for hours doing these really dumb games. And I don't even know what the purpose of the dumb game is, but it's just mind-numbing, just watching these little things come and go, and then someone else is playing solitaire, and someone else is, you know, one of those guys that jumps from this to that, and they do it again, and they do it for hours. And then it gets a score, and then it does a reset, and they go back again. one father had two teenage kids. The two teenage kids were watching, you know, violent movies, and he was playing this game for hours, like 5 hours. And Mukunda's comment was, it's not only like brain numbing, but it's really sad. These old people, that what are they going to become in their next life? A vegetable, maybe, because gosh, it's really sad. And they can't stop. They're addicted. They can't stop. As soon as they get off the plane, get their bag, and they're walking down the court, the hall to get their baggage claim, and they're doing the game, and they're walking down the hall. They're addicted. Where's their thought going to be on at the time of death? Anyway, so it's very sad. So is it okay to feel sad? Yeah, it's okay to feel sad. But the sadness is not just they're making themselves into vegetables. The sadness is the real purpose of life is just forgotten. So on the one hand, and on the other hand, we don't cry, and the other hand, we cry. You know that, here's just sharing a thought. The BBT has been through this torturous exercise of dealing with that purport from Srimad Bhagavatam in which Prabhupada writes, a woman likes to be raped. Because they've gotten blasted for editing the original writings of our founder Acharya. So there's like 16 different options, put an asterisk, make a footnote, put a compendium in the back, and you know this, and I just completely edited it out, or you know whatever, because it, you know, it's obviously Prabhupada didn't intend that. So there's one testimonial that Malati offered was when Prabhupada was told in his room in Los Angeles that Saradiya and her husband Vaikunthanath were sent by Srila Prabhupada to Trinidad, she was raped in Trinidad. When Prabhupada heard it, his hands trembled and he began to cry. And said that person should be killed. Now, should we have feelings when somebody... So, but he is a transcendentalist. So, you know, the man from the neither the living nor the dead, right? So, que sera, sera. She got hers or something. That's not our founder Acharya's position. So why did he write that? Anyway. They still don't have a conclusion. Because they have to do something, but they're not decided about what to do. They've taken surveys. They've done cartwheels and backflips, and they still don't have an answer what to do. Not long ago, I helped an old man at the store pay for his bread. But they had to rerun his purchase, and I saw too late, he also had wine. I was so upset, and I thought, what a big offense. Krishna will be upset because I misused his energy. Tell me. Am I only supposed to help devotees in order to prevent such mistakes? Well, we don't only help devotees because all living entities are Krishna's parts and parcels. And we are thoughtful about charity in the mode of ignorance, charity in the mode of passion, charity in the mode of goodness, and we're recommended charity in the mode of goodness. And therefore, we want to do things that are not just in the mode of goodness, we want to do things that are transcendental. You know, so there are decisions in life that are not easy, like how to give in charity to people that are in need. And since we have limited, just like we have limited time, just ask K. Mangi, she'll tell you all about it. We have limited financial resource. Ask any one of us and we have limited financial resource. So we have to then make priorities about how we're going to use our limited financial resource and then designate some portion of our financial resource to that which is transcendental charity. And that's ideal. Now, what does that look like? And can be singular or diverse or whatever, but that's ideal. Charity that's given for that which is going to be of ultimate benefit for many, 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 if not all living entities. So that's ideal. And we have limited resource. So that's like a simple solution. And that the recipient of that charity doesn't have to be devotees, supposing it's food for life, prasadam distribution. And then it's not just prasadam distribution to devotees, although that's nice too, but prasadam distribution to anyone, everyone. That's nice too. Or contribute to the book fund and help the dissemination of transcendental knowledge, or if you don't have, anyway, so you go on Harinam if you don't have wealth, or et cetera. But, you know, use your time and energy and finance resource that does beneficial work for others. It's 11:25. I think we're going to... Is everyone feeling restless and we should just like end? We're okay. I guess the restless people already left. Okay. This is interesting language, but I'll just read it. Around the start of the Bhagavatam, or maybe Chaitanya Charitamrita, there were words that go something along the lines of, a devotee is supposed to be kind but fierce. I don't recall that. How should I apply this if and when I hear someone blaspheme the Lord and his pure devotees? Well, that's when you get fierce. You don't just smile and tolerate. You express this is an offense, and however you do that. What does it mean to do one's duty when I just want to run away to the temple? Maybe that's your duty. Who knows? Did you write that one? That's your husband's sense of humor, I know. Well, duty has different meanings. Commonly, Prabhupada would use that duty as we have a psychophysical nature, we have a body and a mind, and each body and each mind has a certain propensity for engaging ourselves. And to do that, which is according to our nature, psychophysical nature, for the pleasure of Krishna, that's what our duty is. Like the classic is, Arjuna's duty is to fight. Dharma yudha. Not just fight, but dharma yuddha. Religious, according to the codes of Dharma, if someone is in violation of another living entity's civility and safety, the kshatriya is there to protect them, if necessary, by force, if necessary, to fight, if necessary, to kill, whatever it requires to give protection. That's a duty. And some persons have that nature. And in contrast, a brahmana is more forgiving. Not like if somebody's stabbing somebody, you just, oh. But their nature is different. Their duty is different because of the nature is different. So that's a common use of the term. He specifically, Prabhupada would say, Arjuna was taking the position of, well, let them take the kingdom. I don't want to be the cause of this problem, that problem, and so let me just be peaceful and let them take the kingdom. That's not his duty. Duty is not just like protect his turf, but Krishna wants these wrongdoers are to be held responsible for their wrongdoing. Attempted murder several times and disrobing Draupadi, and by laws of Manu, they're to be punished with death penalty. And if a kshatriya doesn't check people that are punishable by appropriate penalty, if necessary by force, then they're neglecting their duty and innocent people become hurt. So persons that have that authority, they should exercise their authority in the appropriate, commensurate to the situation manner. And if they don't, they're not performing their duty. That's, you know, commonly the sense of duty. So if someone says, I just want to run away to the temple, so that it reminds me of a verse where twice in the Bhagavatam it says, if one doesn't perform duty in the worldly sense of duty, but engages fully in the service of the personality of Godhead, for that person there's no fault. There's no bondage of karmic reaction for non-performance of duty. Now, it shouldn't just be, hey, I'm lazy, I don't want to do what I'm supposed to do, so run off to the temple. Not that. Use myself as an example. My mother and father had an expectation of me, career-wise and so forth, and, you know, get married so they can have grandchildren-wise and all that stuff. So, you know, I disappointed them. I ran off to the temple. But the running off to the temple wasn't because, you know, I didn't want to have a career and didn't want to have that botheration of family life. And so I ran off to the temple so I could, like, duck out of my duty. It was a higher calling, and that fulfilled that duty in a higher way, because the purpose of that duty would get to that place. So I just went to that place. Just unrestricted, unconditional, unmotivated service to Krishna. That's nice. That's the goal of duty. Okay. This last question is tips for maintaining discipline for things like japa books and service. Well, yeah. By understanding what's the purpose of those things, or step back even further, what's the purpose of life? Like, what is it? Over here is birth, over there is death. What's supposed to go in between? What's it all about, Alfie? That's a Broadway show. Right? South Side Story? So, huh? You don't know. I heard. I didn't see it. It's a classic question. What am I supposed to do? What's my mission of life? Another fellow I met during this time I was here. He wasn't using this language, but he tried for some number of years to find out what his mission of life was, and he realized after so long? I really don't know. And it was like, on the one hand, sad, but on the other hand, a big relief to know that he doesn't know, because he had another idea and it just kind of evaporated. It hurt that the idea evaporated, because it was rooted in false ego. And then when he realized it was just rooted in false ego, it's not really who I am or my mission in life, he felt not like suicidal, but he felt that life is now gone. Now who am I? That's a tough spot to be in. But at least he's honest. And most people aren't being honest like that. They don't know. And they don't even know that they don't know. That's really sad. And so they're doing this. Because there's some dopamine buzz, so they just keep doing it. Really sad. Okay. Sometimes trepidation remains about dealing with devotees who bring one to confront our karma, even though they serve as instruments of Krishna. And one is grateful to Krishna for sending that instrument. Does this trepidation count as a negative feeling towards those persons? So I guess different persons can have different meanings for trepidation. So can I ask who wrote this and what do you mean? Really? Trepidation is like hesitation or fear, uncertainty, all those things? All those things? Does this trepidation count as a negative feeling towards those persons? No. It could, but doesn't necessarily. Depends on, you know, seeing Krishna behind the instrument of Krishna. That depends on one's Krishna consciousness, and one's Krishna consciousness can go up and down. Sometimes you see it Krishna more, sometimes you see Krishna less. And then the trepidation goes more to the instrument than to Krishna. Is that all right? We're in this, unfortunately, but standard is we're in the stage of unsteady bhakti. And so unsteady means it's wavering. Sometimes higher, sometimes weaker, sometimes stronger, sometimes it fades because we're unsteady. And that's just part of our conditioning, the unsteady stage. And the trepidation can go towards the instrument or towards Krishna. Because ultimately it's Krishna. It's my relationship with Krishna. Is being self-conscious a sign of lack of humility? If so, how to minimize it? Well, it can be, and it doesn't. But it doesn't have to be. Self-conscious, again, different people use this term in different ways, but self-conscious can mean more self-centeredness, like I, me, and mine, and that's self-conscious. You know, it's a bodily conception of self, or material conception of self, generally speaking, how that term is used. And so is it a sign of humility? It's a sign of being covered in forgetfulness of who we are. But there's a higher use of that term, self-conscious, and that's like the self-realized person. That's self-conscious. And then to enter into that realm of self-realization, humility is really required. But generally, it's not humility. It's a bodily conception. A misconception of self. Because of one's past hurtful experiences, sometimes there's an inner struggle to make deep relationships with devotees. Then fear arises if I cannot make relationships with the present set of people around me. Krishna is so so far. Krishna is very far away. How will I ever make relationship with him? Well, I'm not really sure what this is, the thought behind this. But if one has been hurt, and therefore it's difficult to invest trust in others because one has been hurt, and it's through the medium of those who are representing Krishna and carrying Krishna bhakti that I'm going to get closer to Krishna, and Krishna is far away. How do I make a relationship with Krishna in my present situation? If I've understood the question correctly, it means slowly. That's how. Little steps. Start with something that's a doable little step. Like a doable little step is establish a relationship through reading Prabhupada's books with one who is worthy of my trust, and I don't have to be fearful because I was hurt in the past. Because not just, he's no longer physically present on this planet, but even when physically present on this planet, he would not do something hurtful. So start there. That's a starting point. And establish through hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, a relationship with our founder Acharya, and take shelter there in a personal relationship through hearing and chanting. That's a beginning. And then there's others. One may be cautious because of being previously hurt, but find persons who are trustworthy. Well, find one person who you can communicate with on a one-to-one basis and open your heart to that person who is trustworthy, and establish a relationship with that trustworthy person. So here's a question about inquisitiveness during the initial period of Krishna consciousness, how to increase inquisitiveness. Well, associate with those that are inquisitive. There are those that are inquisitive. And associate with them, and your inquisitiveness will increase naturally. Or just go, take a few giant steps back and just ask yourself, what's important to me? And then you come up with different things that are important to you, and then say, longer term, what's important to me? And then keep going, longer than that, what's really important to me? What's the goal of my life? What's the mission of my life? So then it's very personal, and then, you start to see other things in terms of that fundamental thing, fundamental question, inquisitive spirit. And then it expands into other things, all different features and facets of life. Okay, we're at 20 minutes before the hour. Any additional anything? Comments, questions?
Guru Maharaj, this is not related to the winter retreat theme, but as part of Bhakti Shastri discussion, we were discussing the nectar of instruction, verse, text 1. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, these instructions are meant for the neophyte devotees. And the last line says, those who can control all those vagas of the senses, they can make disciples all over the world. I have heard from you, I have probably asked many times, understand this is a process, but there is some kind of struggle when I see I'm struggling even to follow some of the basic things. There are grosser sense, subtler sense of controlling these urges. There is struggle, Guru Maharaj. I don't know if you would like to, if you can share some light on that.
I don't know what you're asking. I thought you were asking the beginning about the advice, the beginning about making disciples all over the world. And then you went to, I struggle with basic things. I don't know what you're asking.
Sorry, Maharaj, let me try to rephrase. So we understand. Those are the instructions that a neophyte disciple has to follow.
So what to do? That's your question? What to do when you struggle doing the basics? That's your question? Yes?
I mean, not exactly what to do, but how do we understand that? We see there is this path, this journey to really able to go there.
I'm not clear what your question is. Are you clear what your question is? Why don't you think over the question, and then we'll give you the microphone after you've thought over the question. I can easily talk, that's not a problem, but I want to respond to what your question is. She wants the microphone. You don't want the microphone. Does anybody want to add something, question something? Because otherwise we'll close up.
Maharaj, you were about to answer the what part. Can you please answer the what part of her question?
Which one was that?
The struggle, when you are struggling with keeping up the basic practices as a neophyte devotee or maybe an advanced devotee.
Practice. That's what you do. With faith. Abhyasa. That's what you do.
Thank you.
Is that it? Give her the microphone. Let her ask.
So how to deal with the fact or a feeling that I'm unable to even keep up the basic neophyte practices?
I'm unable to even follow the basic neophyte practices. How to deal with that fact and that feeling? Oh. Acceptance and continue to practice with faith. Practice with faith means I have faith in the instructor and I have the faith in the instructions coming from the instructor and I have confidence it will take me to being able to follow the basic instructions of the bhakti process with faith. Remember those three things? You know those three things. So you do those three things and you get there. And however long it takes, you'll get there. Srila Prabhupada ki? Gaur Premanandi.